Today's episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Quote now at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Looking to get out of the ads and back to the story? Fable and Folly Plus is a new way to support the creators you love. The podcast you're listening to right now, and more than 60 others, can be heard ad-free for as little as $4 a month by visiting fableandfolly.com/plus. And now, you'll start to see Fable and Folly Network shows are offering bonus content to all existing and new supporters. Find exclusive new episodes from shows like Where the Stars Fell, The Call of Cthulhu Mystery Program, and Civilized. Plus, early access to new episodes of Midnight Burger, all still entirely ad-free.
Welcome back to Curse, Code, and Crown, a live play Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition podcast featuring a fully original world and campaign. I am the wizard Cronox, Observer of Time. Curse, Code, and Crown features our regular voiceover artists and improvisers, Laura Hamstra as the Orc Countess Ida and Princess Gwendolyn, Tyler Hewitt as Maka Deathcap, and Ryan LaPlante as Duncan Kindano, alongside our dungeon master, the incredible Tom McGee. So get ready for an adventure, including thrills, chills, and hope for a brighter tomorrow. It's time for Curse, Code, and Crown!
Sylvia Tome, the science gnome, has just escaped. You are engaged in combat with the remainder of her STARS team, who are mounting a desperate defense of their leader, the fearless science gnome, and are currently trying to chase Duncan around the room with a giant lighthouse cannon that they are determined to use to murder him. Not the best, but also not the worst, because Maka made them all very confounded. And speaking of, Maka, it is your turn.
Yeah, since they all recently recovered from that bout of confusion, I no longer need to be precious about maintaining that concentration. So I'm going to jump out from cover and try to finish off that flamethrower guy that I had hit.
Yep. Sounds good.
Richard!
Yeah. So I'm going to run up on him and try to strike him with my shillelagh.
All right.
Does bless apply to the attack roll or damage or?
Attack roll and save. So not damage, but attack roll. Yes, you can add an additional d4. I'll roll it for you. Why not? Coming from the scabbard, add an additional 3.
Okay. So that's 13 on a roll then altogether, plus 8 to hit 21.
Yeah, man. Yep. Definitely.
And so that's going to be 1d8 plus 4. Total of 7. Magic damage.
7 magic damage.
Magic damage.
That is just enough. Richard Aiken goes down.
He's going to become a zombie.
Okay. So he drops.
Yeah.
You hear Edward just say, Dr. Aiken! Dr. Aiken! Richard just turns his head and goes, stands back up, doesn't even hit the ground, just like goes partially down, the spores just infest him, and he just lurches back up, full arm out, starts like lurching toward Edward,
and he goes after me, so I'm done my turn, so I'm gonna send him after.
You sure are.
I'm gonna send him after the guy that Duncan is fighting to provide like assistance to Duncan.
Yeah, it'll probably take him a round to get there.
Oh, I thought he was close by. Okay, sorry.
They're on the other side of the. Or actually, wait, no, he's on Joseph now. So yes, he is on the north side of the lighthouse cannon. I do apologize. Without a map, this is all very confusing. It makes perfect sense to my tiny map.
Sure. Is there anyone that I can send this zombie to?
Yeah, you can get the guy who's been pestering Ida.
Yeah, I'll send him over there then.
Okay.
To harass him.
Oh dear. I rolled a 17 and a 19 for his attack. So those are both hits in a rather large way. And All right. Well, when you roll tens and eights on a d10 and d8s, he goes to town on Edward in classic B-list characters from the Star Seam fashion. He just eats that man's brain as he screams. Edward turns to him and just says, oh, thanks, science, you're okay. And then it's just, oh. the zombie falls on him, just like nomming away as Edward screams. Does Edward also come back as a zombie?
I have to be within 10 feet for the spores to take effect, so no.
Okay. But Edward and Richard are now gone. one of them not as gone as the other, as is Kenneth. So the remaining gnomes and goblins you're dealing with are Joseph, who's engaged in combat north of the lightning cannon or the lighthouse cannon with Duncan, Rebecca, who is nearby but hasn't done anything yet. And up top, you've got Wesker and Jill, who are guarding.
Oh, Chris is gone?
Oh, shit. No, Chris is still kicking around. Thank you. Okay. My scribbles are getting too hard to read. cool. So that brings
Wesker,
us to...
Wesker and Jill are still up there, you said?
Yeah, and they're okay. Basically holding action to cover Sylvia's retreat.
Gotcha.
So they're hanging out up there. Ita, on your floor, Rebecca is clear and Chris is clear. Joseph is in combat with Duncan. Currently, the cannon is facing the southeast wall where Maka is, but they're trying to get Duncan, who is now north, so it's actually completely useless for their current purposes.
Let's go with... Fuck it. I'm just going to... let's take out Chris.
Sure.
Let's do it. Let's just do it. And as Ida analyzes his movement patterns, she says, "You have made a profound error. So many errors. Beyond the limit of acceptable errors." And... and she casts Confounding Theorem, of course.
Does a one pass?
Surprisingly, no.
Yeah,
but it's a one in binary.
But I rolled like
infinite.
But I rolled like shit, so he takes six psychic damage.
Okay.
Then I rolled a one and a two on d10s.
All right, not great, but also not the worst. okay.
But he's adroitly analyzed if anyone else wants to attack.
Yeah, he sure is. He's having a whole moment, though, where he just looks around at all of his dead companions and just says, "So many team members dead. So many people who relied on me. You're right. Unacceptable errors. Unacceptable losses. No, you can't think that way. Get your head in the game, Redfield." But he is he's having a hard time.
Renfield?
Redfield. Okay. I mean, if we're doing a Renfield spin, that'd be a whole different yeah. beast. Give it two more sessions. All right. That brings us to the cannon crew and Chris. So they're no longer confounded. Kenneth is dead. Joseph is fighting Duncan. Rebecca. Okay, so Rebecca's going to fuck off out of here. She's actually going to make for that.
I just clued in that these are Resident Evil characters.
Welcome to the party, pal.
That took me a very long time.
You know what?
That's no fault of yours.
If they're also just characters in our story. Yeah. They're all the gnomes and they're all the science gnomes in our team. It's fine. For what it's worth, the fact that you clued into that based on Chris Redfield talking about all the allies he's lost is a pretty deep cut, and I'm proud of you for it. So Rebecca runs for the door. She runs for the north door and is clearly not going to try and fight. Because, I mean, she's looking at Duncan just kind of like literally cutting through people towards her and is just not here for that. So she's going to run for the stairs or the service ladder, rather, at the north end of the room. Joseph is fighting you, Duncan. He's going to take an attack. He's going to swing a fist at you. He is not a combat gnome. He is a science gnome. And his job was to fire the big cannon. So he's going to try and punch you with his tiny gnomey fist. He gets I rolled a 13 and he gets minus one. So he throws a fist out, which I imagine you probably catch if I'm thinking through
I think that would be, yeah, like cape over catch and just throw him off balance with it. Yeah.
And he just has a little like, like this. He's not used to flourishes. Flourishes are not scientific. Chris, however, kind of gets his shit together. He's going to try and shoot the zombie. That's what
that would
I would
be pretty
shoot.
Horrifying to see if you were Chris.
Your friend is being eaten and one. All right. He hits the zombie for.
Zombie has one HP, Tom.
Yeah. Zombie goes down.
But I get to roll damage. Five.
How many times does he kill the zombie, Tom?
So many. So he just says, Richard, Edward, I'm sorry. And he just blows them away with a blast of his blunderbuss. Will it stop him? No. But does he feel it? Yes. So that's it for them. Man, Joseph is fucked. Elevator is gone, so that's fine. Duncan.
Well, he's got a guy who punched him to try to kill, so game on. Like, I think it's just swing the fist away and then just run him through the back, kind of, as he spins him out with the punch. Let's see what happens. The first attack is a 25.
Yeah.
And the second is an 18.
Yeah.
Nice. And we are doing a grand total of 18 damage with the bone sword.
Remember that time when I said he was a science gnome, not a fighting gnome?
Yep.
Amount of hypotheses will save you from the blade of Duncan Kindano. What happens to poor Joseph?
This one, I think, is Duncan's not even wasting time. It's just run through. As he draws the sword out, he throws Joseph away with the other arm to clear his path, and he's right after Rebecca. Like, no one runs from justice, is all he says as he sprints towards her, like, Verstappo in the nine!
And she just yells, I'm a medic, I'm a medic, I'm a medic! Which, admittedly, you know is not true, because when you were in the tent and everyone got injured, it was a lot of, like, band-aids and nothing else. You know for a fact Maka had to heal her. She is just trying not to die. Okay, great. Bring us to, they're both dead. Top of the round, Sylvia's gone. Maka. Your only real present threat now is Chris on this floor.
Yeah. If I can get to him in one move, I will.
You can, he's very close to you.
Okay, yeah. I'll get to him and I will swing the shillelagh at him.
Great.
18 plus. Do we need to add D4 in my modifier, or we're good?
I mean, you can if you want to feel cool, but no, that goes through.
That's okay. 1d8 plus 4 magic damage. Man, that's a 2. So 6 magic damage.
This is Chris, like, right?
Yeah.
Oh, you can bet your butt you can add 4.
Oh, all right. So he went from not bloodied damage to bloodied. Okay. You smack him with the shillelagh. As you do, he, like, you knock his head in the direction of Edward and Richard, and he just goes, unacceptable losses. So many unacceptable losses. He's looking pretty rough. Anything else you want to do this round, Maka?
That's it. Movement and action. Yeah.
Great. Up top, it is Wesker and Jill. Wesker says, I've run the numbers, and this is not going well for us. And Jill's like, yeah, you fucking think? She just kind of observes everything that's going on, she kind of shakes her head, and she says, no, fuck it. Stabo was right. This isn't worthwhile. Leaps down off the second level to the main floor. She's got a pistol because she was on science duty. She starts blasting the window on the north side, trying to make a hole. So she opens fire on that.
Where Duncan's standing, I think as he's sprinting, he'll yell, take them alive if you can! He wants to know where the fuck Sylvia is and what the fuck is going on.
She fires faster.
I'm sure she does.
But
I'm not saying you can stop gunfire.
No. But it is also like no one has automatics. Like, we're still very much in the world we're in. So she almost cracks the window. These are super reinforced, obviously, because in the middle of a storm center. So the window is cracking and splintering as she fires sort of her equivalent of Mr. Bang twice, and then you see her pop the back open and start like reloading quickly. Wesker, on the other hand, is still holding his wand, but as he sees Jill run, he just says, it seems she is making her last escape. This is very concerning. And he disappears into the back and starts digging around in a bag.
Thanks for supporting the Fable and Folly Network. Here's another show we know you'll love.
Greetings, I'm Bernard.
And I'm Magenta. You might know us from such hit podcasts as Madame Magenta, Sonus Mystica,
Horror Anthology Magenta Presents,
or Season 3 of Mockery Manor.
We're everywhere.
And we're spreading faster than an STD in an old folks' home, because now we have a brand new podcast, Wham!
Wham! It's a fun acronym that stands for We Have a Movie.
Oh, it's not just an acronym, Bernard.
It's not?
It's a chat podcast where we invent smash hit Hollywood movies based on popular toys.
If you like the Barbie movie and you want to see similar treatments of your favorite childhood toys, I'll wager you'll like Wham! With episodes on Polly Pocket, Rubik's Cube, Game Boy, Strawberry Shortcake,
Furby, Connect Four, and lots of other nostalgia bait. But it's not just for adults who still like toys. It's a podcast for anyone who loves Hollywood tropes and comedy.
And quantum mechanics.
And BDSM.
Wham! Has something for everyone, but is still specifically about movies.
That's Wham! W-H-A-M. You know, like when Batman punches someone.
Yes.
Adam West. That Batman.
Exactly.
Not the Christopher Nolan one.
No.
Download it anywhere you listen to podcasts. That's what the world needs, another movie podcast.
Was that clear? Maybe I shouldn't have mentioned quantum mechanics.
Ida.
So it's Jill who is firing, she's on, right?
Yeah, she's firing at a window. You get the sense she's looking for
an escape route, right? Yep. I am going to adroitly analyze her, of course. And I'm going to cast Disarming Theorem, having heard Duncan's keep, you know, take her alive, which will just charm her, but I'm afraid of killing her otherwise. This is the thing with these rolls. You got 2d10. You can roll really well, like really shit.
We've established they are fairly squishy. So
yes, I don't want to kill her by accident.
The non-zero chance of accidentally nuking this person.
I think for a little bit more distraction, Edith just starts like rhyming off like some complex, like geometric, like number sequences. And so she needs to make a wisdom saving throw DC 14.
No.
She is charmed.
Yeah, rolled a 13 and she's got a minus one. So here you go. Yeah. All right. So, I assume based on being charmed, you're going to stop her from shooting the window.
Yes. I mean, I'd like her to put down her gun entirely.
Cool. What does Ita yell?
I think it's just she's she just continues to list off numbers. Like she's just doing it. It's almost hypnotic, I think, at this point, to the point like where like Jill would like literally just like lower her arms and like drop her gun, kind of like head kind of cocked, like
so like yeah,
staring
like
at
fully
her.
Enthralled.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the bullets just fall out of her hand and just kind of clatter to the ground next to her. And the gun just kind of drops and she's just like staring at the fractals that are appearing in the cracked glass. Yeah, love it. Good play. Very good play. All right. Rebecca. Running away from Duncan. So here's the thing. She can get to the ladder. I don't think she can get up the ladder before you reach her. So she turns around. She turns around, sees you, this like fucking nightmare rushing at her saying, take them alive, which is equally concerning to her. So with just kind of a resigned look, she reaches up to her vest, opens a pocket, and just pulls a pin and just stares at you kind of in defeat. Duncan, it's now your round. She's just pulled the pin on something. I'll give you a dex save at advantage because it is your round.
Okay.
See if you can dodge out of the way. The nice thing is she is in the little like ladder alcove. So if this thing goes off, it's pretty contained.
Nat 20.
Okay.
It was the first die roll. So just, he's so ready for this. He hates those fucking vests.
Yeah, so I'll say, yeah, fuck it. I'll just give you a full free round now. So you literally, I think, just throw yourself up against the wall to the side, and you hear her say, oh, shit, and then the grenade goes off. So there's, like, a blast of fire up over the, up onto the second floor, blast of fire out through the front, and electricity as she releases the energy that was contained in the vest. But you were just out of the range of it. So, you know, you get a couple of little jolts, but you're fine. Because you rolled an at 20, I'm not going to take away your movement as I was planning on with this save. So you've got your full round. Jill is staring at a window, thinking about how beautiful cracking glass looks. Upstairs, Wesker is doing something that you're generally unaware of.
Duncan will look over to Ida and just yell, get the vest off her if you want her alive. And then he's just going to take off sprinting. And Tom, you'd mentioned there were crates and stacks of things that were around. And he would like to acrobatically essentially run up a bunch of the crates and leap onto the second floor because he doesn't know what that fucking guy is doing. But that explosion is very bad for what happens if you leave scientists alone in his brain.
Absolutely. So I think we'll say this is a double, like a move and an action to like run, climb, sprint, and jump. Give me an acrobatics, please.
Great. That is an 18.
Okay. Yeah. So there are a bunch of crates that are, again, like stacked kind of around the lighthouse cannon to some extent, near enough. So you rush and you just like leaping stride up the first two and then kind of leap up, hoist yourself up. The nice thing is because Wesker is no longer holding his action, he's not just going to like insta-gib you when you get up there. You notice as your foot springs off the boxes, they are imprinted with the laureled House of Nano. Insignia, which is concerning, but not a present concern. You leap up onto the second floor you see Wesker pull a syringe out of the bag. And he kind of like just through his mirrored sunglasses gives you a little gnomish grin holding the syringe. It's not his round, so we can't do anything with it yet, but it will be in a moment. You're one move away from him. You're still like, you're not super far away. Like, it's not like you're on the other side. But that is where things stand. Maka. Actually, Duncan, you can, if you want to yell anything to Maka, you can. Like, you see this. You can't do anything else, but you're not like.
He's not going to yell like he's got a needle. Duncan, I think Maka might be able to get a handle on what's going on. Ida might have an idea of what's going to happen scientifically. Duncan is just like, well, that's bad. That's probably what he says to us. Well, that's not good. That's all that comes out of our weird superhero of the night that has appeared out of this survival gear.
Yeah. Also, for the record, when I say Sandman, I mean like old DC, like pulp Sandman, not like beautiful, like Neil Gaiman Sandman, like just like I'm wearing a gas mask and a trench coat, I'm here for ending things. Love it. So you're super spooky and you know bad things are coming, but you are also a bad thing that's coming, so tomato. Maka, what do you do?
I'm still fighting Chris. I'm gonna try and take another swing at him for non-lethal damage.
Oh.
17 plus 8 plus a d4 of bless to hit.
Yes.
six magic damage, non-lethal.
Is he still analyzed, Laura?
No, I shifted my analysis to Jill.
Gotcha. All right, he's barely hanging on, but he's looking rough. Okay.
All right.
Just still muttering, so many dead. Which brings us to Wesker. With a sly grin, he jams the needle into his neck. You see angry purple lines begin to jut out of the insertion. His body begins to undulate and twist, and you see his, you hear the crack of bones as his body begins to reform, with a trembling arm that's beginning to split as his muscles grow. He just pushes the glasses back up his nose, as a tooth juts through the bottom of through his upper lip. And he begins to take on a monstrous form. Unfortunately, you know, having your whole body transmogrify does take a full round. So you've got a brief moment to fuck with this. Ita, Jill continues to stare at broken glass.
Can you remind me, was it Wesker who set off the vest?
No, Rebecca. So Rebecca's dead. She blew
up. Oh, okay.
Duncan was warning you that Jill is currently confounded by you.
Yeah.
But she's also wearing one of these vests. And as has already happened to all of you, if she pulls the pin, it'll release all the stored electrical energy and possibly knock her out. So his point was, if you want Jill alive.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
I'm sorry, Laura, does Jill have to roll a save to shake off your...
No, it's only going to last until the end of my turn.
Oh, okay.
The end
so
of
she's
this turn. She's yeah. Liberated.
All right, because Jill has initiative above you, but if she can't shake it off, she can't shake it off. So she will continue to
stare. Oh, sorry. Until the start of my next turn. So either so way,
it doesn't matter.
Either
she
way.
Was
either yeah, way.
Either way, you're good. Very very lucky initiative order.
So basically, as she's like coming round, I will rip the vest off of her and basically toss it across the room.
Okay, yeah, it's not like a bomb vest. Like, you actually have to activate
it. I know,
it,
but not... I don't...
Fair enough. No,
I'm
you
know,
with you.
There's bomb shit in it. Like,
I agree.
Get it away.
I get it. Yeah, so you toss it away dramatically, and she just kind of turns and looks at you as like, the confusion is fading, and she just kind of mutters... As she like looks up at you because she's tiny. She
yeah.
Goes, oh shit. Great. So you've basically handled Jill. Duncan.
That's it. She's just.
Oh wait, shit, Chris. Chris is gonna take a desperate. He like cranks back with his tiny gnomish muscles and attempts to punch you as hard as he can. Maka, what's your AC?
19.
I rolled a pair of fours. So even with advantage, he punches you as hard as he can, and it's not that hard.
Why does he have advantage?
Because he's special.
Oh, okay. I want to know how to get some of that advantage for me.
Be a science a gnome.
Man.
Yeah.
Women want him. Maka wants to be him.
You want to be highly ineffectual and haunted by the deaths of your friends. So he punches you as hard as he can, and nothing happens. It's not dramatic or exciting at all. And then he just kind of looks up at you with like a grim resignation that this is clearly his fate. Duncan. So to refresh your memory, on the second floor, this is the industrial floor. There's a lot more mechanical shit. So a lot of monitors. But again, keeping in mind that technology in this world is like fantasy-y. So we're talking like not like a big TV screen, but like just various things. There's dials and various sort of knobs and things showing you essentially storm levels. And they're all maxed out right now. Like all of them are in the red zone. There's the massive tunnel that Sylvia and her pod disappeared through. From where you're standing, you can see through it, and you can see rain drifting in past the opening. It seems to lead further up into the sky. But there is an open space. It's just, again, a little ways up, kind of on a tunnel, like a diagonal tunnel. So mm-hmm. It's on an incline, but there is a vent there. There are small windows on this level, not as many, but a few, just for observation. And Wesker is against the north wall. What do you do?
He's going to make a break for Wesker. Just sprint towards him and say, well, if you're putting something in there, why don't I join you? And he'll raise his hand to stab his poison wrist blade into Wesker's body, because if he's expanding, maybe it'll speed the poison through his whole system.
Nice.
So he'll use a swashing point for his attack. And then Tom.
Yes, sir.
I get two attacks with my attack action, and I have an attack action I would like to attempt with my second attack. I would like to open his vest and try to yank the pin on Wesker as he's growing up, because that feels like something doable.
Yep. Yeah, I'd give you that.
Okay.
I'll need probably a sleight of hand on that, I think.
That sounds great. Okay, so for the first one, the first attack comes in. Oh my God, it's going to be obscene. I'm going to do the math anyways because I don't get to do this very often. So we're starting at 21.
Oh.
Plus 7 takes me to 28. Plus 4 takes me to 32. Yep. Plus an additional 4 takes me to 36 to hit.
What?
With the poison dagger.
Wow. Yeah.
Whoa.
That was blessed, swashed, and... Oh, wait. One more. That takes 37, because I was also dueling, which gives me one. It's dope! Every bonus in the world! I mean, fucked if anyone shoots me, but sometimes, in beautiful moments up close, it works.
Oh, man.
Damage
nice.
Is...
One fights.
Everyone
you
can
hit
go,
a dragon with that.
Like, everybody, like, smoke him if you got him. Duncan's got, like, 20 more minutes of bonuses to tally up. You're all good for a bit.
So that does 8 piercing damage, and it does poison damage as well. The DC is 15.
Okay. He's going to have disadvantage on this because of the transformation. Fail.
Great. Tom, the poison does what poison does, because I only have the DC written down.
Yep, I got you.
He's poisoned and shit.
And then you want to pull the vest.
Yes, and then I want to do the sleight of hand here, so... We will see what this does. Oh my God, yes! Natural 20!
That was the funniest way to say that! That was so real! That was someone reading numbers.
Very happy.
And the words were coming out as the eyes made contact with the numbers.
That was a nat 20. I'm not even adding shit to that. But Tom, I do want to note, I'm using another swashing point. To be able to disengage and use my full movement distance as a bonus action to essentially pull the pin and be like, good luck, and then just roll the fuck back the full distance away from the guy. Actually, he'll roll just right the fuck off
this.
Level 2 down to level 1. Like, great. I think it's just disengage down.
Great. So you hear, no, 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 and then just like, there's an explosion and you see a mass of transforming muscle that is just shot through with a blue poison in addition to like muscle growing. So like he's transforming into like a cool, like, you know, ultra form, but now the poison is also rushing through those muscles and combining with the serum he just shot himself with. And then he exploded. So his chest is open, heart is beating like visibly as he staggers forward. And just falls off the second level, crashes into the side of the crystal, bounces off it, and just like scores, like just with a clawed hand down the side, and is just like hanging from, like he's dug into the crystalline creature that is screaming.
Whoa.
And he's just hanging from that over the long elevator shaft. Duncan, you rolled a 20, so I'm going to give this one to you, bud. You approach. He's got an exposed beating heart, claws on the thing. He's barely hanging on. How do you send him to his doom?
Duncan draws forth his dagger instead of the rapier. The dagger comes up in one hand, and he just spins it around so that it's facing kind of top out of his hand. And he walks forward with it just awkwardly in front of him, and he looks at him and he says, "This one, it's for Starbo. So I feel like I gotta do it right." And then he just fucking prison shivs the shit out of this giant heart. Just like not one stab.
Screaming and writhing. It goes to swing up at you. And I think you just kick the hand aside. There's no strength in it. It's massive. But like with that amount of muscle growth, but also poison, like it's getting real big, but there's no strength. It's just muscle upon muscle upon muscle. Untrained steroid use, if you will. And eventually, it just the fingers spasm and it just kind of like stares at you through the glasses and tries to move its mouth. But when you're stabbing that fast, no fucking words come out. So the hand releases and
pop him in the eye through the glasses. At the glasses
shatter. The head bounces off the back and it plummets, crashing into the elevator on the way down. All of it just falls down at the base level. Map gnome Judy Greer is she got blown up by a fire guy who fell off earlier. She fell a long way, but she's doing okay. The maps took the worst of it, which really is truly worse for her than anything else. She starts crawling towards the elevator. She's figured out how the mechanism works. She sparks the wires, and she sees a light turn on, and she smiles to herself. This is truly her day. And then the elevator comes, and with it, hell. the entire bottom of the observatory blows out in a blast of flesh, poison, fire, and metal. And the storm suppression system showers it in sand.
Nice.
Maka, you're quickly able to subdue Chris at this point. Enough has happened.
Yeah.
In a twist that is deliciously name appropriate, Jill Valentine and Chris Redfield have survived a horrific event that cost most of the members of their teams their lives. Sylvia has disappeared, but you have gained control of the observation deck. With the death of Wesker and the explosion below, for the first time since you arrived at the observatory, the three of you are in complete control. Meanwhile, back in Doc Malvern's clinic, Gwendolyn, you've had some time to think on what the doctor has said. Obviously, you know, he was tuckered out, so he retired to his room. This is the same day as what's occurring over in the observatory. So how do you think Gwendolyn spent her day?
I mean, it's not very exciting, but probably quiet contemplation.
That's
because
totally fair.
Because there, it was just a lot to take in. I think that realization. I think she hadn't. I do think that she had been approaching the creation of the Alliance of Equals with a very optimistic, very idealistic point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And not really thinking that there was any chance, like basically in her mind, once someone joined up that was like, hey, everything's great. We got all the people. We're all going to work together. Everyone's interests are going to be aligned forever. It's going to be great. So I think having heard about like the Blue Moon Corporation and seeing parallels with what happened in Bleen and just kind of reflecting on all of that, I think she's kind of putting the pieces together of what she has observed so far and mm-hmm. how much that power is a corrupting force on this world and how economic power can be wielded mm-hmm. to cause suffering for a lot of people.
It's probably also worth noting just in your thinking around how this is affecting Gwendolyn, your father, all he wanted, you know, amongst other things, because he still, you know, ran a kingdom and everything, but mm-hmm. his biggest insecurity, that in turn kind of became Orville's biggest insecurity, was the fact that like no one would deal with Orville.
Yeah.
And so I think just to add to your thinking around what alliances mean to Gwendolyn, I think growing up, like as with any child observing like the dream their parents want more than anything in the world, there is a shine on alliances for Gwendolyn, I think. And he very much would have been conditioning you to be like, if you can, you must form an alliance. And honestly, yeah. The day you died was like a big day of like, this is the first time anyone's even bothered to show up. This is exciting. So I think there's likely that element too, which is like historically, this is a alliances are the unreachable goal They're, you know, almost a quixotic, like, was it Undreamable Dream? Whatever the fuck that song is.
Impossible Dream.
Impossible Dream. Thank you. Yes. Yeah. Undreamable Dream. That's just being
always
awake.
Dream.
So yeah, I think the color that's being added to these things is weighing on you rather heavily, but by the same token, you do actually have, information and experiences that are informing it. So I would add that, like, this is a lot and it complicates things, but I don't think it's a lost cause. It's just a complicated.
Yes, for sure.
Complicated cause. Is there anything you think you would do? Do you have any follow-up questions for Malvern? Is there anything else that you think you would want? He's clearly on side now.
Yeah.
So it's possible.
Here's the thing. It's like, I feel like everything I've asked, like, he... Like, I feel like he's given me all the information on, like, these other examples of, like, what happened. Like, he doesn't know, you know, he only knows the stories. So, I think Gwendolyn would want to ask, I think she wants to know about who is suffering in Gren. And because she's just not aware enough, except for, like, the few people that they've found and helped. I think she's just aware that, well, there's no way that I can, like, ever meet every single person. Totally. So this is more just like, what is it really like out there?
Okay. All right. So it's been a few hours of quiet contemplation after, you know, having bombs dropped on you. I imagine you wouldn't bounce back. How long do you think she spent? Is it like an hour? Is it several hours?
I think she probably just, like, literally, like, laid on, like, whatever bench there was. Like, she just kind of laid down, maybe even on the stone floor, just kind of, like, laying down with, like, her fingers, like, folded over her stomach.
Yeah,
for Nev probably did that, a good, like, 8 hours.
Okay. Nev definitely did that awkward thing that... I'm like, in my experience, it was always my mom who was like, the like, oh, you're napping, like, quietly trying to sneak around, still being loud, but, like, trying not to be loud. So I think Nev is doing that, where there's a lot of, like, taking, like, very careful steps and the floor creaks every time, but you can tell he's trying to be careful, but it's still very loud.
Yeah. He's trying to scrape mildew off the window, like, really quietly.
Yeah, he's doing it in that slow way that's still very loud.
It just takes a lot longer.
But slower. Yeah, exactly. He's very much doing, like, the Baby Groot thing where, like, every time he, like, scrapes a little bit, he just looks back over his shoulder to make sure that you're still asleep, but he also can't tell. So he just keeps going. Bleep, meanwhile, is literally being quiet because he can just fucking fly around. So he's fine.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So after an extended period of contemplation.
I'm just picturing Bluffkin.
You're correct.
Okay, cool.
It's obviously who I'm picturing as well, but he's, yeah. We've established he's a different color because I needed to make it my own so I couldn't get sued. But yes, 100%, that's who I have in mind.
Buckin.
Yeah. just doing a full Fables. You, because he's pink, I believe, rather than the traditional Aussian blue. So you finally decide you need more like, not answers, but you have a question for Doc Malvern. How do you approach his room? Is this like do you Kramer your way in through the door? Do you, like, knock? I guess I'm curious, based on your previous interactions, like, how Gwendolyn approaches this now.
Oh, because Gwendolyn, I think, is a little bit more confident. I think they've, now that they've developed some sort of rapport, that this is it's a gentle but comfortable knock.
Okay, cool. There's no response.
Knock a little louder.
Still nothing.
I try the door handle.
It's open. You can go in.
All right, I kind of creak it open and just like, Doc Malvern.
You can see that he is like very cozily ensconced in bed. Like we're talking like comforter, like up to the chin. It's weird because he's not wearing like the plague doctor mask or anything. He's just like chilling out. But no, he's just having a snooze.
Oh. Is he actually asleep? I just want to check because I don't want to like wake him up if he's sleeping. But sure. I also want to be like, he was like pretty sick.
Sure.
Are you doing the old man not dead check?
Yes. Yes, I absolutely am. I can just hold my hand like under his nose to see if it like fogs it.
For the record, there's no nose to put it under, so you're actually putting it above his beak.
Above the beak, yes, of course.
So you place it there, and Gwendolyn, you feel nothing.
I kind of gently prod his arm.
It weighs so little. You're actually astounded at how little mass this person you knew had. But the arm moves and then falls back comfortably. And looking down, you realize that Dr. Malvern is dead.
This episode of Curse Code and Crowd Sound was mixed and edited by Laura Hamstra, and the campaign was created by Tom McGee. Our original theme music was composed by Landon Noblock, and Curse Code and Crown's artwork was created by the brilliant Del Borovic. If you want to follow our players or our DM on Twitter, you can reach out to Laura at EL Hamstring, Ryan at the Ryan LeBlanc, Tyler at Tyler_Hewitt, Tom McGee at McGeeTD, or you can message our whole company at Dum Dum Dice. So please join us again for more Curse Code and Crown!
Dum Dums and Dice has to give a special thank you to the supreme beings of our Patreon at this time. The Half-Blind Prophet, Christopher Little, Sue One, George Dolby, Lord Abradovic, Orion Birchfield, Scott Garland, Benjamin V, Gavin and Abby McDonald, Cade Peters, Richard Cranium, Anna Zed, Logan, Fire Unfriendly, Acrix, Grandma Likes D&D, Alan, Austin Nut Powers Fry, Stabby Stranger, Roman Brown, and Jill and Noel LaPlante. If you want your name to be added to this list, you can join our Patreon too at patreon.com/dumdumdice. Thanks to them, and a little bit of thanks to you.
The Fable and Folly Network, where fiction producers flourish.